So we're going to start. And I want to talk about Manishtana. This year, it's different. It's not the same Seder. People are going to ask Manishtana Alayla Zeh Mikol Alaylot with a completely different tone and intonation. Because normally, that question resonates against the background of the night of the Seder, as opposed to the entire year. And that's the way the Manishtana is built. Shebechol Alaylot Anu Osim, Alayla Hazeh, Kulo Matzah, Alayla Hazeh, Maror, Alayla Hazeh, Kulanu Misupin, and so on. So that's usually what the Manishtana is all about. There's also another type of Manishtana, understanding that the first version, if we may, of the Manishtana already existed in the days that Beit HaMikdash still stood and functioned. When I ask times, many times I ask adults if they can just remember the very first Mishnah they ever studied in their lives. And many people think in terms of Pirkei Avot, or perhaps the first Mishnah in Masechet Brachot, that they may have some experience learning as children. But the answer really is, Manishtana Alayla Zeh Mikol Alaylot. It's a Mishnah. In the 10th chapter of Masechet Pesachim, it's just that the kindergarten teacher didn't know that it was a Mishnah. So, but now we know. And when one examines the text of the Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim, so you have the question about matzah, you have the question about maror, but you also have another question about Korban Pesach. And the language is, it sounds very similar, but it's adapted to Korban Pesach. Shebechol alaylot anu ochlim basar tzli shaluk umavushal. Every night throughout the year, we eat meat that's cooked, that's potted, that's roasted. Halayla hazeh kulot tzli. On the night of Pesach, it must necessarily be roasted, because the Korban Pesach has to be roasted, kolotzli. Now, just for information purposes, the main course at the meal of Seder night was not the Korban Pesach, or putting it in our language, lamb chops. It was not lamb chops. It was something else. They offered another Korban on Erev Pesach. It was called the Chagigah Arba'a Asar, the Korban Chagigah of the 14th, the 14th meaning Erev Pesach, and the meat from that Korban was the meat for the menu for the Suda, for the meal at Seder night. So when did they eat the Korban Pesach? It's exactly when we eat the Afikoman. So when we eat the extra matzah at the end of the meal as a dessert, as a kinuach, most people don't really have a hearty appetite at that point already, especially those who have the, you know, the great Lithuanian minhag to eat knedlach, and they're all filled up. And no matter what you eat on the meal, after having eaten the kezayit of matzah and maror and korech, and then you have your meal and so on, and then you're staring at another kezayit's worth of matzah as the afikoman. The only reason we eat it is because it's a mitzvah to eat it, and we eat it as such. The Korban Pesach was also eaten as a type of dessert after the main meal, and the halakha was that it had to be eaten al hasova, ne'echal hasova, when you're already satisfied, when you're already satiated, which means you're not really in the mood to have another piece of meat, but you eat it because of the mitzvah. And the Mishnah tells us that the children would ask, shebechol alaylot anu ochlim basar tzli shalukim uvushal, halayla zeh kulot tzli. Because there is an opinion that says that not only the Korban Pesach had to be roasted on the open fire, but even that meat that was served for the main course at the Suda, for the meal for the Seder, the Chagigat Arba'azar, that also had to be roasted over the open fire. So I'm just pointing out that was a little bit of a dispute, whether it did or didn't, but the Mishnah took that into consideration, and hence it says, Halayla Hazeh Kulotzli, everything had to be broiled. That question is no longer as a part of our Haggadah, as the whole idea that Beit HaMikdash is not with us, and that has impacted on our Seder. And hence, immediately after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, when people sat down for the first Seder in the period of Galut, they asked also, Ma nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot? So what is different this year than all the other years? All the other years, we had Beit HaMikdash, we ate the Korban Pesach. But tonight, we are not eating the Korban Pesach. And that in itself impacts on many, many of the halachot of the night. For example, Moror. The Torah never gave us an independent mitzvah to eat Moror. That never says that in the Chumash. It says that you have to eat the Korban Pesach al matzot umrorim yochlu, to eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah and Moror. In the absence of Korban Pesach, so basically matzah and Moror go by the wayside. They're dropped. But there is an independent obligation to eat matzah on Seder night. Ba'erev tochlu matzot. Now again, to be fair, what I just said now is one opinion. It's the accepted opinion in halacha that the eating of matzah today remains a mitzvah d'oraita, a biblical command. There is an opinion in the Gemara that challenges this and says that just as the absence of the Korban Pesach brings the downfall of the mitzvah of eating with it moror, it also brings the downfall of the eating of matzah, because it's the same pasuk, al matzot umrorim yochlu. And that view did not accept the tradition that the pasuk in Parshat Bo, ba'erev tochlu matzot, indicated a unique mitzvah to eat matzah on the night of the Seder, irrespective if there's a Korban Pesach or not. But the view of halacha from the days of the Gemara and through the Rambam, through the Shulchan Aruch, till this very day, is that there is a biblical command to eat matzah. So matzah is on the agenda on a biblical level, but maror is only a rabbinic mitzvah. Why is it a rabbinic mitzvah? As we said, because once Korban Pesach was dropped, there is no mitzvah of eating maror. So our Chachamim, after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, instituted that we should revive the mitzvah of maror and eat it as a type of zecher lemikdash, to remember that once upon a time, there was a Korban Pesach that was eaten together with maror. And perhaps you could also say that the period of the Galut is in itself a period of maror. Well, I'll tell you a little anecdote. Many years ago, in 1983, I had served in the Israeli army, and I went through basic training, not like our kids or grandchildren have done through the rigorous 2, 3, 4 years. But as Olim Chadashim, as new immigrants, there was a program called Shlav Bet, second timers or old timers, if you may. And indeed, we were not young. We were like 30 years old to 40 years old fellas. And I had the great pleasure of serving in a platoon with one of the great refuseniks from the 1970s, Yosef Mendelevich. He's a known personality, lives in Kiryat Moshe in Yerushalayim. And I would lived in Alon Shvut in 1981, when Mendelevich was freed from Soviet the prison and came to Eretz Yisrael. And he came to Alon Shvut because at the point, at that time, he had a sister who lived in Alon Shvut. And at that time, Yosef Mendelevich spent Pesach with us in Alon Shvut, and he told us the following. He said, when he was in solitary confinement, so he was allowed about an hour a day to walk outside in the yard just to get some air and a little exercise. And there were another five such refuseniks in the same situation of solitary confinement, and they would meet up, the six of them, during this 1 hour of walking and able to talk and so on. So they decided, they knew it was coming Pesach, they decided that they're going to make a Seder. Now this was actually an impossible situation. How do you make a Seder in a scenario of a solitary confinement of the Soviet prison, Siberia, and they didn't have matzah, they didn't have anything. So they decided that they were going to pool information because they really didn't know much anyway. Mendelevich's father was a communist. His grandfather was a religious Jew, and he remembered things from his grandfather when he, Yosef Mendelevich, was a child. And all the other five pooled together information that they remembered from the home. So they decided to write on pieces of paper that which should be on the Seder plate. So they wrote matzah, and they wrote charoset. He said, moror, they didn't have to write a petek because every day was moror. So they didn't need to be reminded. What was fascinating about that particular Seder was that the Mendelevich himself recalled that on Pesach, you're supposed to do something with a body of water. And he didn't remember what it was. He had no idea what it was all about. Later in Israel, he seemed to have identified this with a custom, a minhag, that on the seventh day of Pesach, to do some type of a ceremony called Kriyat Yamsuf, to remember the splitting of the Red Sea. But Mendelevich at the time didn't know that. And he just remembered that there was something about Pesach that related to a body of water. And as it was near the gate of the prison, there was a little brook that had some water flowing through. So the six of them decided, we don't know what to do with this body of water, but we're just going to, you know, jump over this brook. And they jumped over the brook one after the other. One, two, three, four, five, six. And that was that. And they figured they had a Seder. And Mendelevich continues to tell us a story that eventually all six got out of prison. Not on the same day. All six made it to Eretz Yisrael. Not on the same day. But they did make it to Eretz Yisrael in the exact order that they had jumped over that brook. In the somewhat model Seder that they put together for themselves in the prison. And he himself was the sixth person to jump over that brook. He said he was the last one of that group, that Chabura, to make it to Eretz Yisrael. And I think an absolutely fascinating story. So we have the Manishtana Laila Azeb of post Beit HaMikdash era. And because of that, Rambam, who writes the Seder in the 12th century of Egypt as if the Beit HaMikdash was up and running, because Rambam is writing theoretical halakha as it should be in its most perfect ideal state. But then he has to draw our attention to the fact that in our day, this is deleted, this is changed, and he uses the phrase bazman hazeh, and today, and he gives you the adjustment. In the eighth chapter of the Laws of Chametz and Matzah, where Rambam presents the Seder from beginning to the end, and I say again, the Seder is presented as if the Beit HaMikdash was up and running, but there are six parenthetical inserts where he will say, Bazman Hazeh, such and such. And one of them has to do with the Manishtana. So the Rambam brings the question, Manishtana Alayla Hazeh Mikol HaLeilot. He brings the question, it's not exactly in our order, but they are the same questions. The question of dippings, he has the question of matzah, he has the question of moror, he has the question of misubin, of sitting in a reclined manner, that's four. And he also has the question about korban pesach, shebuchol alelot anu ochlim besar tzli shlukum uvushal halayla zeh kulot tzli. And then he continues after his presentation of the manishtana, as it was in the days of Beit HaMikdash, he says, "Bazman hazeh." But today, eino omer, we do not say, "Va'alayla hazeh kulot tzli." We delete that question, "She'ein lanu korban," because we don't have a korban pesach, and therefore the question became irrelevant, and so it's deleted. I found in the Haggadah of Rav Menachem Kasher Zatzal, a Haggadah called Haggadah Shleima, where it's an anthology of many, many different commentaries on the Haggadah. And towards the back, he has photos of certain medieval manuscripts of the Haggadah. And in one particular Haggadah, whether it makes sense to you or not, I'll just give you the number. It's from the Cambridge Library, number 152. And the manuscript in the Cambridge Library of 152 of the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and this is obviously for a community in Europe, no doubt. The fifth question is still there, except obviously the children would not ask Halayla Hazeh Kulot Tzli. Every night is different, but tonight we just have roasted. How would they dare ask that question if there's no Korban Pesach? So the Haggadah version, as found in this manuscript, is V'halayla hazeh, and on this night, hayinu ochlim b'Beit HaMikdash kulot tzli. In the times of the Beit HaMikdash, we would have eaten the meat that would be only be roasted over the open fire. Which means that a community that had this custom, based upon this version in the Haggadah, halayla hazeh, hayinu ochlim b'Beit HaMikdash kulot tzli, refused to let go of the fact that there was a question about the Korban Pesach right here in the Manashtana. Refused to let go. Now, it's very similar, by the way, to what we all do towards the end of the section of Magid. Right? Towards the end of the section of Magid, after the Dayenu, and after we go through the Esser Makot, the 10 plagues, and then we multiply all the plagues, and we say that each plague in Mitzrayim, if the plagues in Mitzrayim were 10, then at the Yamsuf there were fivefold, which means there were 50 on the Yamsuf. And then the next Tana says that each one, a plague in Mitzrayim itself is multiplied by 4, and hence in, on the Yam, they're multiplied by 5 more. And that's because the Mitzrayim, the idea was it was a finger, Etzba Elokim, and on the Yamsuf it was Yad HaGdolah. Now God doesn't have a finger, doesn't have a hand. But if we translate this into a human picture, so the hand has 5 fingers. It's 5 times more than the other. And hence what happened at the Yam Suf was 5 times greater than what happened in Mitzrayim. So the argument is how many makot can be divided for each makah in Mitzrayim. The maximum was 50 in Mitzrayim times 5 is 250. Add it all up, that's 300 makot altogether. That's a tremendous amount of makot. And the reason that the Chachamim were busy multiplying the Makot is because of the Pasuk, Kol HaMachalah Shasamti B'Mitzrayim Lo Asim Alecha Ki Ayni Hashem Rofecha, that all the Makot that were given to the Mitzrayim, to the Egyptians, God promised He'll never give to Am Yisrael. So we have a great interest in multiplying the Makot, the plagues that were given to the Egyptians. So right after that section, the Mishnah tells us, and it's found in our Haggadah, it says that the Rabbi Gamliel Aya Omer, Rabbi Gamliel says, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bepesach, lo yatza yedei chovato. Whoever does not explain the following three matters or mitzvot did not fulfill his obligation. And what are they? Pesach, matzah, and maror. It's interesting, the Rambam's version is mirorim, not maror, but rather in the plural, conforming to the biblical phrase, al matzot umrorim. And the reason is because maror is not one particular vegetable, but the Mishnah tells us there are about 5 different vegetables that can be used, satisfy the requirement of maror, and hence it's in the plural, mirorim. But for our purposes, Pesach, Matzah, and maror is what we have. Now in our Haggadah, it reads, Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bezman shebeit HaMikdash kayam al shuma. The Korban Pesach that was eaten in the days of Beit HaMikdash, why did they eat it? Why did they eat the Korban Pesach? And it goes on to give the answer. Matzah. Why is there matzah? And it goes on to give the answer of matzah. The Rambam, when he presents the Haggadah to us, and I said again, in the spirit of Beit HaMikdash up and running, tells us that at that point we say, Pesach zeh. The Korban Pesach that's right here, why are we eating the Korban Pesach in the present tense? And the answer is, because God skipped over the homes of the Jewish homes in Mitzrayim, and so on. And then the Rambam at the end of that section says, but today, you have to make an adjustment. We say, Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bizman shebeit HaMikdash kayam. So here in this particular section, we have preserved the idea of what once was in the days of the Beit HaMikdash. And today we simply revise the version and do not put it in the present tense because we're not eating the Korban Pesach, but rather we put it in the past tense. Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bezman shebeit HaMikdash kayam. The Korban Pesach that once upon a time was eaten by our forefathers in the days that the Beit HaMikdash stood. It's interesting also, the order that the Rambam talks about these three mitzvot when the Beit HaMikdash stood. He talks about Pesach, and then he talks about Maror, and then he talks about Matzah. Now, if you just recall our Seder, that's not the order. The order is Pesach, and then there's Matzah, and then there's Maror. The question is, why did the Rambam reverse the Maror and the Matzah? Why does he have Pesach, Maror, and Matzah, and not as we have it today, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, as the Rambam has it in the Haggadah of today? And the answer is because, as I said earlier, Maror does not stand on its own as a mitzvah. It's linked to the Korban Pesach. And hence, once one mentions the Korban Pesach, that's the time to talk about the Maror as well. Whereas Matzah is an independent mitzvah, so that comes next. So it's Pesach, Maror, and Matzah. However, in today's day and age, when there is no Korban Pesach, and what remains is just the biblical mitzvah of Matzah and a rabbinic add-on of eating Maror, so certainly the biblical mitzvah, the mitzvat asei min haTorah of Matzah, comes first. And that's why the Rambam has Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. These three mitzvot, by the way, are really the core of the Manishtana. That's really what the Chachamim insisted, that we should educate our children to ask the proper question. I remember once our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Zal said that 60% of the answer is a proper understanding of the question. And he said this in the context of the custom of what we do today. We get to the Manishtana, and we let the children or grandchildren ask the Manishtana, and then whoever's reading the Haggadah continues with Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. But there's a view from the Chatam Sofer, Rabbi Moshe Sofer from Preshburg, 19th century, who said that after the children asked the question of the Manishtana, so whoever's reading the Haggadah, the father, the grandfather, whoever is reading the Haggadah publicly, out loud, should repeat the Manishtana. So the question is, why does he have to repeat the Manishtana? The children already asked the question. So the Rav explained, so because the parent or grandparent should explain to the children how important these questions are, the significance, why these are the questions that he's asking. Because we are very, very hopeful and very confident that from the four sons of the Haggadah, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and Sheino Yodei Lishol, we are very optimistic that our children fall into the category of the Chacham. Certainly, hopefully. I mean, they say a story, I mentioned this at the OU Center at least one time, maybe more, that in the neighborhood of Kiryat Moshe, in Yerushalayim, so there's a street called Rehov HaIlui. Ilui means the genius. It happens to refer to the Meitzitza Ilui, whose name was Rav Shlomo Palachek, Zichronon Levracha, who was a student in Brisk of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, and he migrated to the United States, this Rav Shlomo Palachek, and he taught the highest shir at the Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elchanan's in New York City from 1921 to 1928. And it was his passing away in 1928 that brought the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, from Warsaw to New York, to the Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elchanan, and the rest is history. But this Meitzitza Ilui has a street named after him, not far from the Angel's Bakery. So they say a story of, there's no name on, I mean, you can read in small print who it is, but the name of the street is Rehov HaIlui, the street of the genius. So they say a story of a mother wheeling a baby carriage, and on Rehov HaIlui, and somebody says, by the way, who is the Ilui? And the mother looks down at her own child and says, he's the Ilui, he's the genius. And that's the way we somehow have this perception that our children are, you know, the greatest and the brightest and so on. But for sure, as an aspiration, we want our children to fall into the category of the Ben HaChacham, the wise son. And what does the wise son ask? Ma ha'edot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem. What are the mitzvot? What are the dinim? What are the laws, the customs that are necessary for Seder night? That's what he's asking. He's not asking for storytelling. It's the tam, the less sophisticated. He's saying, Mazo, what's going on here? And the response is, all right, tell him what's going on. Tell him the story. He's asking for a story. You give him the story. But the Chacham who's asking for halachot, so the response is, va'af ata emorlo kilchot ha-pesach. You teach him the halachot. And then the Haggadah, which is a quote actually from the Medrash Mechilta, says, ein maftirin acha pesach afikoman. That after the eating of the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to have any other dessert. That's where the word afikoman comes from. It's a Greek word, but it means after the eating of the Korban Pesach, no more eating. And that's our halacha for the afikoman matzah as well. After the eating of the matzah of the afikoman, there's no more eating of anything. So the people ask the question, why do we have to teach the Chacham specifically that halakha? So it was already the Vilna Goyen who said, that's obviously a good question, but that's not what the original version of the Medrash was. You know, somehow a key word of two letters was deleted in the copyists. It's ad ein maftirin achar pesach afikoman. You should teach him the Hilchot Pesach until ein maftirin. What is that all about? If you open up the Mishnah, Masechet Pesachim, it's practically the last, it's almost the last Mishnah of Masechet Pesachim. Ein maftirin achar pesach afikoman. And the response to the Ben HaChacham, to the wise son, is teach him all the halachot from A to Z, basically. That's really what the answer is. Teach him the halachot. And what are the core halachot? The mitzvot of the night. Pesach, matzah, and maror. And that really is the focus of the Manashkana. And that's why the Chacham Sofer said the father should repeat the question, not to repeat it, just babble it up again, as we just heard them, but should teach the children why these are the questions. Because that's very, very important in education. Question and answer. And never, God forbid, to tell a child or a student, oh, that's a dumb question. What you have to do is you take a question that may not be the greatest question in the world, and help him work it out that it should become a good question. That's called healthy teaching. And the Seder night, according to the Rav, was a model lesson in education. And that's what one of the great ideas of the Manashtana is all about. Now this year, we are going to go beyond Manashtana Halayla Azeh Mikol HaLaylot that they did after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. How to explain the difference between Seder night with Beit HaMikdash and Seder night without Beit HaMikdash. This year, in Tavshin Pei, Pesach, Seder night is going to be very different for all of us here in Eretz Yisrael and throughout the world because we're going to be in quarantine. I'm not guessing what exactly the message this evening of our Prime Minister is going to be, but it seems as if we are going into a more escalated quarantine for 3 weeks until after Pesach, and then a Kadosh Baruch Hu should have rachmanut on all of us, and we should get by b'shalom, and those who are ill should recover, ki ani Hashem rof'echa, and then there'll hopefully be some relaxation of the strict regulations now about quarantine. But it's apparent that we're going to have our Seder not the way it's been done in previous years. So if we think that a Seder, traditional Seder, was you put in all the extra leaves you have in your table, in your dining room, because you're having over, the extended family. Some of us may have children and grandchildren. Some may have uncles and aunts. Some may have this, some may have that. Some neighbors come, and it's just a large Seder. I just recall in 1973, the year I studied in Alon Shvut, and I was a single fellow in the yeshiva. So we then had 19 Americans in the yeshiva of 150 Israelis. So Israelis obviously go home for Yom Tov. The Americans in those days, it was not customary at all that those boys or young ladies who came to various schools didn't go back to Chutz La'aretz for Yom Tov. But they stayed in Israel for Yom Tov, and it's just such a beautiful time. And not everybody had family who they could go to for Seder. Now, some of the fellows did have Israeli friends that they were able to get themselves invited for a Seder. But the two Rashi Yeshiva, the luminaries, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and Rav Amital, Zichronam Levracha, extended an invitation to all the Americans to choose this one or that one, but to come to the Seder of the Rosh Yeshiva. And I was in a somewhat of a tug of war, but Rav Amital encouraged me to come to him, to give up Mordechai, and I went to his Seder. His Seder, there were about 60 people around the table. It was just a sensational Seder, where he had various neighbors who did not have Seder for themselves. He had his own family, which was beginning to grow at the time. He had other students. It was remarkable. And what was most remarkable is how Rav Amital was able to bring everybody into the picture and didn't limit his conversation to 3, 4, 5 people sitting very close to him at the head table. He would really go around the table and elicit suggestions and comments from the entire crowd. And everybody was very, very involved in that kind of a Seder. I mean, he was just a master teacher. And he also knew something that later our Rebbe of Soloveitchik told me, what normally you see in a shul, Dalif Nei Miata Omeid. You should know who you're standing in front of. And that's obvious message for somebody who's davening. But the Rav said it's also for a teacher. Know your crowd. Dalif Nei Miata Omeid. You should not overshoot the crowd in terms of the level of the people you're talking to. But on the other hand, he said you shouldn't insult their integrity and intelligence either by undershooting. So Rav Amital was a genius here in being able to talk to the various people around the table on their levels, which was really remarkable. Dalifnei mi ata omeid. So you have this very, very large Seder, and you don't have to have 60 people around the table, but some of us have made Seder at hotels where it's a very, very large Seder. The concept of a large Seder is far from being a modern idea. Because in even the days of Beit HaMikdash, we were encouraged to have large Sedarim. And the reason was because you didn't have an individual bringing a Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach, the word that's used in the Mishnah is manui. Manui, modern Hebrew, means subscription. But here it means you're bound together in a chabura, in a group. Several families got together on one sheep. And one sheep, the meat of one sheep, of one lamb, could go around for so many different people because all you had to eat, as I said at the outset, was a kezayit, a small amount, as a dessert at the end of the meal. It was not the main dish at all. So we were able to very, very clearly have a Seder with many, many, many people. And this was done even after Beit HaMikdash without the Korban Pesach, that we have large tables and large people, many people, and have a Chabura. At least we have somewhat of the atmosphere of the large Seder that existed in Beit HaMikdash. And Ma Nishtana Alayla Zeh Mikol HaLilot. And this year we're going to ask the question, why is this year different from all other years? This year it's not going to be a large Seder. This year there will be people sitting and making their Seder alone in isolation, in quarantine, in bidud. This year there are going to be people making Seder with 2 people, maybe 3 people, not much more than that. It's going to be a very, very, very small Seder. I've told people that this year we're going to look at the Haggadah, and the story of Bnei Brak, of the 5 great luminaries, the Tanaim, and invite them to the Seder. So we're going to invite Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Lozam and Azariah and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We're going to invite them to our Seder. So somebody asked me, so how's that going to work? How can they come to my Seder? Maybe they want to come to your Seder. I said, it's going to work like Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi can make it to every Seder. So these 5 Tanaim can piggyback on Eliyahu HaNavi and come to our Sedarim as well. And we're going to carry on a conversation with them because they went through difficult times as well. Their Seder, that was the Seder of a clandestine nature, away from the windows, away from the Roman sentries who forbade fulfilling mitzvot. This was the Seder where the talk was the Bar Kokhba revolution. and they were dealing with it in a most serious manner. And unfortunately, that chapter in our history turned out to be an unbelievable calamity, because between 1 and 2 million Jews perished during the days of the Bar Kokhba revolution and the Hadrianic persecutions that came in the aftermath. Our Seder is going to be different. This year, our Seder, we're going to be able to reflect upon more sections of the Haggadah than usual, because we have less people around the table. Instead of saying, all right, so this year, I normally have a Seder of 3-4 hours, so this year, the Seder is going to be 1.5 hours. No, we're not going to say that. We're going to make a Seder of 3-4 hours as well. And we're going to discuss with whoever is sitting with us, opposite us at the table, all of these sections. We're going to discover things about the Haggadah this year that we never ever realized was there because of time constraints. I remember growing up in my home in Brooklyn, so my father, Alva Sholem, would say at a certain time we would talk about various sections, and then he would look at the clock and say, all right, you know, we'll leave the discussion of the remaining part for tomorrow night. Tomorrow night you have the second Seder. But it didn't always work out like that. And here, we only have one Seder, and usually this is what happens. We talk a lot about the first few sections of the Haggadah, and then we step on the gas and we read it much more quickly, and we want to get to the meeting of matzah, you know, and people are already buzzing that the food is ready in the kitchen, they want to serve it, and so on. This year, that's not the case. It's not the case. We're going to be able to actually come to the Seder much more relaxed. People will prepare their homes. Because we're in isolation, we're in quarantine, you have plenty of time, another 1.5 weeks to prepare the homes, not to leave things for the last minute. You can't run out and do shopping on Erev Pesach this year. People should rest on Erev Pesach in the afternoon and come to the Seder refreshed with the motivation to discuss all the matters that should be discussed of Manishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol Alev. I want to point out that it is extremely difficult to go through any particular day without going to shul. I mentioned in various shurim on Zoom that 3 years ago, some of you from the OU Center do remember this. 3 years ago, I suffered a slip disc situation that left me without the ability to walk for 2 weeks. Baruch Hashem, got over it. It took a while. I remember when I finally got back to shul, some nice lady in shul told me, slip discs, there's good news and bad news. I said, yeah, what's the good news? She says, it goes away. What's the bad news? She said, it comes back. Great. But I actually did have a mild relapse a year ago, but really it was mild. But I remember that time, it was Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Shvat. It was Parshat Ba'era. And I was sitting at home. And I said, this is the first time I haven't gone to shul on a Shabbos since I'm 3 years old. I was a shul goer as a child. And I sat and I listened and I absorbed. Not going to shul on Shabbat was more painful for me than the leg that was excruciatingly painful. But nevertheless, and here we are, another davening, another shacharit, another mincha, another ma'ariv, another Kabbalat Shabbat, another Shabbos Shachris, another Shabbos Musaf, another Shabbos mincha. It's not the same thing. And I miss it. And here we are before Pesach. And what's going to be with Tfilat Tal? There's such a moving tefillah of Musaf on the first day. And there won't be Yizkar, but I will tell you that you can say Yizkar at home, does not need a minyan, but it's not going to have that atmosphere of Yizkar in shul. So we're missing all this. And we're doing it because we are instructed by the health authorities to stay home and stay put and not make clandestine minyanim and not make minyanim outside. these are categorically wrong. And unfortunately, because there are those who thought that going to shul overrides the instructions of the health ministry, I don't know how many of you are following the data that's coming out these days, but I say it with great pain, how in some of the very religious communities, the coronavirus has hit in a very exceedingly large numbers. People are sick, and it's clear that almost a third of all the infections that took place, all the contaminations took place in the presence of shul and yeshivot, and the authorities were yelling already for 3 weeks to tone down and to close up, and some people just didn't do it. And I say again, with regard to the Seder, we made a big mistake, not everyone, but some people made big mistake with regard to large Purim party. Very, very big mistake. And we're paying for it right now in pure numbers. Do not make the same mistake for the Seder night. Do not have a Seder with many people around the table. Do not have a Seder where you can have grandparents and grandchildren at the same Seder, because you don't know who's a carrier. Most of the young people, most of the carriers are actually young people and may not even feel sick, but they can infect the elderly, and the elderly who get this as a disease can, God forbid, be fatal. Be very, very careful. This is not a joking matter. And funeral is something that is outrageous. It's outrageous. It's criminal. And I'm sorry that the police did not interfere and intercede and to stop the disperse the 400 people. This is only something that can lead to greater proliferation of the virus. When we say this year, the Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim, so hopefully we're going to be saying the Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim HaBnuya. Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim HaBnuya, that Yerushalayim, it should be the Yerushalayim of the type of Leila Seder that the Rambam talked about originally. The Leila Seder that will have all of the requisite component parts, the Pesach, the Matzah, and the Maror. It's not out of reach, and we don't know how we're going to exit this particular epidemic, but the Rav Zichron LeBracha always told us that while we may not have the theological answers why a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings tzara, affliction, to an individual or to Am Yisrael or to mankind, we don't know. We don't know the specifics. We're not prophets, but what we have to do is exit them as better people, exit them as more refined people. Everyone should look in the mirror and just try to figure out where he or she can just do a little bit more for the next person, a little bit better in terms of refining our attitudes, and the cumulative effect in Mirat Hashem will be felt throughout Am Yisrael here in Eretz Yisrael. It will be a greater nation than we were before. And that's really something that we have to strive for. And to that end, we will say, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habnuya, that God willing, next year, we'll be able to open up our tables once again with all the leaves, invite all the family, and as part of the Yitziat Mitzrayim, of Kol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Kihilu Yatza Mimitzrayim, every generation has its meitzar, its limits and bounds. Min ha-meitzar karati, we will call out this year from our bounds of being locked into the home. And Emir Tzashem, next year, we will have a Yeshua, a redemption from this meitzar as well. And it will be L'shana Haba, Yerushalayim HaBnuya.